And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by searching for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Well, happy Friday to you. Happy start of a very busy Azalea Fest weekend across southeastern North Carolina. So many events and activities taking place over the next couple of days. The big Arlie Garden luncheon today, the parade taking place tomorrow morning, a street fair happening throughout the entire weekend, a major boom for the North Carolina economy. This was back in 2011 where these numbers come from. But in 2011, UNC Wilmington conducted an economic impact study of the Azalea Fest. 2011 was, 14 years ago. And at that time, it had a $50 million economic impact. That was in 2011. So you can imagine how things have grown in and over the last 14 years to take everything to a major, major economic impact for businesses all throughout the area, specifically a big, of course, emphasis on downtown Wilmington and all of the folks that are going to be hanging out at the street fair, shopping at not only the fair itself, but all of the local businesses that exist through downtown Wilmington. So a major economic boost. The weather looks absolutely gorgeous this weekend. So if you are not, if you don't have any plans, making it down to the street fair, checking out some of everything that's going to be going on down there is definitely worth doing. Taking a look at those with temperatures for the next couple of days. 84 today. Sunny, very, very, very small chance of rain. 84 tomorrow, no rain. 84 on Sunday, only a 10% chance as well. So you really couldn't ask for a nicer weather weekend for Azalea Fest here across southeastern North Carolina. It's going to be a great weekend to get out and enjoy it. All right, taking a look at some national news we are tracking this morning. Some big-time shakeups at the National Security Council. This coming out late in the day, last night. At least six staffers at the National Security Council have been fired, with more firings expected, according to multiple officials speaking anonymously to various news outlets last night. The firings came after Laura Loomer visited the Oval Office on Wednesday and presented President Donald Trump with opposition research on NSC staffers whom she viewed as neoconservatives, neocons, or not sufficiently loyal to the president, according to one government source. The president told reporters Thursday that he saw Loomer on Wednesday, although he claimed that she had nothing to do with the firings. When asked about the NSC firings, Trump said that his administration will, quote, always fire people. He said, quote, always we're going to let go of some people, people that we don't like, or people who can't do the job, or people who may have loyalties somewhere else. Sources said those fired included Brian Walsh, Senior Director for Intelligence, Thomas Brody, Senior Director of Legislative Affairs, and David Faith, another Senior Director. One source said Loomer was also targeting Alex Wong, the National Security Advisor, who's Mike Waltz's deputy. So some changes going on there as well. We're also learning about some shakeups over at the National Security Agency. Air Force General Timothy Haig was reportedly fired yesterday from his post as well as the head of NSA. His removal as that, of course, the NSA, the nation's premier cybersecurity and espionage agency, or also known as the group that went forth and got essentially an illegal wiretapping authorization on the president of the United States and his family. That was courtesy of the NSA, the National Security Agency. The ousted NSA director, civilian deputy Wendy Noble, was also let go yesterday, according to sources. Noble was reassigned to the role within the Pentagon office for Undersecretary of Defense Intelligence, according to the Washington Post. The reason behind the NSA shakeup is unknown, according to U.S. officials who spoke to media outlets. And I think it's pretty clear, and I don't know that this is anything that anybody should be shocked or upset or freaking out about. I mean, you look at all of the three-letter agencies that exist within our federal government. FBI, NSA, CIA, the list goes on and on and on. These three-letter agencies that are swarming with bureaucrats. Swarming with individuals who have zero interest in working with this administration. And I know that this is a really tough thing for folks to wrap their head around, and I'm not really sure why. There is a new sheriff in town. There is a new president in the Oval Office that has a completely different political agenda than that of the last administration, and has a very different political agenda to the vast majority of higher-ups in these three-letter agencies. These individuals are entrenched in the bureaucracy. They are entrenched in big, out-of-control government. That's just where they are, and it's the organizations in which they exist. And we saw during the first Trump administration, and I think it was a failure on the first Trump administration, they didn't do a good enough job cleaning house. They kept too many Obama people around, and it ended up, I think, in large part, biting Trump in the ass pretty handedly. I mean, every single time the guy got on a phone call with anybody, those details were immediately available in the media. I mean, Trump couldn't talk to anybody without anonymous sources and experts that have information on the call releasing quotes and information to major media outlets. I mean, Trump's 1.0 administration was a sinking sailboat. I mean, there were holes everywhere. And I think Trump learned his lesson on that. It seems obvious that he did, because it's a major issue. Now, I'm all for government transparency. I am all for, as us, the American people, taxpayers here in this country, having access to information from our federal government. But there is a huge difference between transparency and leaks of sensitive information out of the Oval Office, out of the White House. And that's for large part of what you saw. Any conversation with world leaders, any sort of influential phone call that Trump made in the first go-around was immediately available in the press. That's not good. Now, of course, the media could use it as an opportunity to take isolated quotes, which of course were unverified by anonymous sources, and use those to try and pin the president down on something. But it was very lucrative for the media to have access to that information. It was very lucrative for them to be able to report on all of the bad things that Trump said on phone calls, right? The phone calls, the one that got him impeached, right? So the media loved it. And Democrats, of course, were the ones feeding this information to the media so that they could turn around and write stories about it. That's a huge issue. And I'm glad in this second go-around, Trump seemingly has learned his lesson. He has gotten rid of a vast majority of Biden appointees and Biden individuals within the Oval Office, within the White House, within the executive branch. And now he's starting to expand his horizon on this, expand his scope. And now you can see some of these other agencies being gone after. The National Security Council, the NSA. That's what needs to be happening. You cannot have individuals who work under an administration that are acting in opposition to that administration. I know that probably sounds a little confusing, but to me, it's not overly complicated. If you don't agree with the president's agenda and you are a high up in some three-letter agency, you have one of two options. You either change the sheet of music that you're singing off of and start going down the road of the president's agenda, or you resign from your post. I mean, those are the two options at hand. You don't get to decide whether or not you like the president's agenda. You don't get to decide whether or not you think the things that he's doing are good or not. You were not elected president. You're a completely unelected individual. You are the textbook definition of a government bureaucrat. These people have not been elected. These people were not appointed or not confirmed into these positions by somebody within the U.S. Senate. These are appointed positions at the will of the President of the United States. And it's unfortunate that these situations have to arise. It's unfortunate that individuals who don't work for any political party, individuals who don't work for any specific administration, right? They work for the American people. They work for the President of the United States and the U.S. government, are unable to put aside their nonsensical political bias and just do their job. But we've seen it time and time again. Lisa Strzok, right? You remember that whole shenanigan that rolled out a couple of years ago. What was the other guy? Peter something or other. These individuals working within high levels of the federal government were extending or were sending text messages back and forth talking about coming up with a backup plan if Trump was successful in the 2016 election. Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. They were doing that as high-ranking, high-level government employees. Actively coming up with a plan, actively working to sabotage an incoming administration. Now, whether you like President Trump or not, whether you like Joe Biden or not, the idea that you would have individuals in that high level of government actively trying to sabotage an incoming or a current administration is insane. I mean, it's completely nuts. But this is how the left operates. This is how the left does their business. They don't care about what's best for the American people. They don't care about the will of the American people. They don't care about any of that. They're interested in their politics. They're interested in their ideology. They're interested in their agenda above all else. And it is time for individuals that are unwilling to get alongside the administration and work towards the same goal to get the hell out of government. It's really not that complicated. It's for the most part, pretty simple. If you don't like what's going on, if you don't like the people that are driving the ship now, that are setting the agenda at the national level, then leave. Then leave. Nobody wants to quit their job. Nobody wants to leave their job. But when the alternative is, well, we're going to sabotage the current administration, that's insane. You are not paid to sabotage the incoming administration or the current administration because you disagree with them politically. I mean, you are when you talk about the deep state, when you talk about the swamp, right? This is what we're talking about. These are the kinds of individuals that have so much hatred, so much animosity in their heart over President Trump, over conservatives, over Republicans. They deserve to be nowhere near these levels of government. They've proven that they're incapable of dealing with it. I didn't prove that. You and I did not force these people. President Donald Trump did not force these people to actively work against the administration. President Trump didn't force them to act as partisan hacks in a nonpartisan position within government. He didn't. They decided to do this themselves. Because the left is incapable of dealing with individuals with opposing or opposite opinions. The left is incapable of putting their political bias, putting their political agenda aside, and doing what they are authorized to do. Doing what they are required to do, which is provide a job or provide a service, whatever it is that they're employed for the American people. Whether that be the head of the NSA, whether that be the head of the FBI, whether that be the head of the National Security Council, it doesn't matter what the role is. I mean, you can play it out as many different ways as you'd like. This is not overly complicated. Things are changing in Washington, D.C. Yes, that is a fact. I'm not going to deny that. Nobody is going to deny that. Major, sweeping, radical changes are coming. And again, you have two choices. Either get on board or get out. Senator Mark Warren, the Democrat from Virginia, the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, slammed Trump's decision yesterday, saying, quote, "General Haig has served our country in uniform with honor and distinction for more than 30 years. At times when the United States is facing unprecedented cyber threats, as the Salt Typhoon cyber attack from China has so clearly underscored, how does firing him make America any safer?" Warner wrote in a separate post, "It is astonishing that President Trump would fire the nonpartisan, experienced leader of the NSA while still failing to hold any member of his team accountable for leaking classified information on a commercial messaging app, even as he apparently takes staffing directions on national security from a discredited conspiracy theorist in the Oval Office." Harpening back to this alleged meeting on Wednesday with Laura Loomer. But see, Mark Warner here kind of buries the lead on all of this, right? Nonpartisan experienced leader of the NSA. I feel like I can say this in good confidence, that Trump made this decision with some pretty accurate information. I very highly doubt that Donald Trump fired the individual over top of the NSA without having very strong, credible information that this individual was in fact not working in a true nonpartisan manner. Don't you? And I've made this point on the show before. This is always the left's talking point. They've got all of these groups, all of these entities that pop up, and they're all called nonpartisan this or bipartisan that. It's anything but that. Now, they claim that so that they can gain some sort of attention from individuals, right? So when they're having their politically charged conversations, they can say, well, but it's a nonpartisan group. It's a nonpartisan organization here. Meanwhile, all they do is puppet narratives from the left wings, from the left side of the political aisle. All they do is puppet far left progressive liberal ideology. Right? It's easy to say you're nonpartisan. It's easy to say that you're bipartisan or you've got all of these people from different sides of the aisle, but it's just never true. I mean, just here in Wilmington, there's a half a dozen groups right off the top of my head that I can think of that show up to things like school board meetings, like county commission meetings, like city council meetings every month or every other month, talking about how we're a nonpartisan group of this, a bipartisan group of that. You go on their social media and it's just bashing Republicans 24/7. It's just demonizing the right. It's just not true. It's a wake. It's a lame, weak attempt by these groups to try and draw some level of confidence or some level of authority out of their organization, right? Because if they just go out and say, hey, we're a left-wing activist group, nobody cares. But because they masquerade it by claiming, whoa, look at this, we're a bipartisan nonprofit, whatever the hell they make up, they can justify their far-left progressive ideology under the guise of being bipartisan, under the guise of being nonpartisan. We're a nonpartisan activist. We're a nonpartisan this, we're a nonpartisan that. It's bullshit. If I'm being just frank and honest with you, it's complete and utter bullshit. It's just not true. And I can't speak explicitly to the leader of the NSA, but I can speak about all the times that I've heard this and all the times that I've seen this. It's just never true. It's never been the case. It's a cheap attempt at gaining credibility for organizations that have one message and one narrative, and that is one that is incredibly far to the left. And so you've got these shakeups happening in Washington, D.C. There's going to be more of them. There's going to be a lot more of them. This administration has got a very, very aggressive agenda going forward in terms of a timetable, time frame. A very aggressive, forward-looking agenda. that agenda needs to be carried out meticulously throughout every level of the federal government. And so when individuals who are in government, unelected bureaucrats who sit in all of these cushy offices through Washington, D.C., that are not interested and not willing to enact that agenda, those individuals need to be fired. Those individuals need to lose their jobs. There is no time, no place for it. Either get in the car or get out. It's really not that complicated. Now, I'm sure that the media, and I've already seen it, the media is having a conniption over these firings over at these two different agencies. Yesterday, I saw just the headlines all over the place and all of these out of control headlines. For example, this is the Washington Post. NSA security advisor ousted by right-wing activists. Ousted by right-wing activists. Well, new sheriff in town. There's probably a good reason for it. So we'll have to see what some of that fallout looks like. But that's what's going on. And I'm glad. Again, very, very aggressive agenda. Very, very short timetable to get it all enacted. There's no time to try and carry dead weight across the finish line. People that aren't interested in working with the president, people that aren't interested in the agenda, they just need to go. It's really as simple as that. Turning our attention to tariffs this morning, some breaking news coming out just around 6:30 this morning as it relates to the big tariff announcement yesterday from Wednesday from President Donald Trump. China is set to impose a 34% retaliatory tariff on all goods imported from the United States. China's finance ministry said today that it will impose a 34% tariff on all goods imported from the United States starting on April the 10th. This is following duties imposed by the United States and the Trump administration earlier this week. The ministry said, quote, China urges the United States to immediately cancel its unilateral tariff measures and resolve trade differences through conversations in equal, respectful, and mutual beneficial manners. It further criticized Washington's decision to impose 34% of additional reciprocal levies on China, bringing the total U.S. trade tariff against the country to a whopping 54%, as, quote, inconsistent with its international trade rules and, quote, seriously undermining China's interests, as well as endangering, quote, global economic development and stability of production and supply chain. All of that from the China's finance ministry. All of that obviously translated as well. Separately, China also added 11 U.S. firms to the unreliable entries list that the Beijing administration says may have violated market rules or contractual commitments within the country. China's Ministry of Commerce also added 16 additional entities to its export control list and said it would implement export controls on 7 types of rare earth-related items, including terbium, gladonium, and seranium, 3 elements and rare earth minerals that I will admit I have not heard of and not familiar with. Beijing, which also entertained a trade relationship with Washington, D.C. under Trump's first term, had warned that it would take resolute countermeasures to safeguard its own interests after the White House disclosed its latest sweeping tariffs on Wednesday of this week. Other U.S. trading partners have held off thus far from announcing retaliatory tariffs amid hopes of future negotiations, with the European Union nevertheless voicing a readiness to respond. The mutual U.S.-Chinese levies are set to impact a trade relationship that is worth over $582.4 billion worth of goods in 2024. That's according to the Office of U.S. Trade Representative. Analysis expects U.S. production or protectionist trade policies, rather, to steer China towards other trading partners to see if it implements further stimulus measures in an effort to galvanize the economy. Now, I made my points very clear yesterday on President Donald Trump's discussions on trade and tariffs and all of that fun stuff. But China's going to seek out other trading partners? Like who? I mean, yes, the United States needs China. But China also needs the United States. Let's not be ignorant or stupid here. All of the cheap crap that China produces, they have to offload it somewhere. And they are very good and very effective at offloading it here in the United States. Go into a Walmart and pick up every product. On the other side of it, it'll say made in China. So I understand that China is trying to one-up President Trump. This claim that they're going to steer towards other trading partners. Who the hell's going to buy it? I mean, where are all these goods going to be taken into? It just doesn't make any sense. China needs the United States. The United States needs China. It's a relationship that is a massive one, nearly over $1 trillion a year. That's what it was last year, $582.4 billion. So this is obviously a power play that's going on right now. I hope for the United States' sake, I hope for the American consumer's sake, that these two countries come together, that these conversations, the negotiations start taking place. This is set to go into effect on April the 10th. That's next Thursday. Now, will there be a major policy decision change? Will something drastically happen between now and April 10th? I don't think so. In all likelihood, probably not. But it definitely is going to be interesting to see how this trade relationship between China, between the United States plays out. President Donald Trump yesterday was out and about and, of course, was asked some questions about his decisions on tariffs, asked about his global trade war that he decided to spin up on Wednesday. This is what President Trump had to say to the reporters in the media yesterday.
The markets today are way down. The worst day in years because of the tariffs. So how's it going?
I think it's going very well. It was an operation, like when a patient gets operated on, and it's a big thing. I said this would exactly be the way it is. We have $6 or $7 trillion coming into our country, and we've never seen anything like it. The markets are going to boom. The stock is going to boom. The country is going to boom. And the rest of the world wants to see, is there any way they can make a deal? They've taken advantage of us for many, many years. For many years, we've been at the wrong side of the ball. And I'll tell you what, I think it's going to be unbelievable. The thing that people have to talk about, we're up almost to $7 trillion of investment coming into our country. And you'll see how it's going to turn out. Our country's going to boom.
He says our country's going to boom. For the sake of my paycheck and everything that I enjoy doing, I hope that's the case. Taking a look at futures this morning, Dow futures, again, pretty miserable right now, down almost 1,100 points or so. S&P futures down about 150. NASDAQ futures down almost 600. That's almost a 3.5% sell-off on NASDAQ futures today. Yesterday, one of the worst days in the economy in the last 5 years. That is going to happen with this. With these drastic policies that are coming out of this administration, this is unfortunately the result. Now, President Trump thinks he's got a long-term plan. President Trump believes that he can wait this thing out, hold this thing out, and the United States will end up being more prosperous and more jobs and all of that will come back to the United States. I hope he's right. This is a very big gamble for him. As I talked about yesterday, I'm not going to recap yesterday's show. If you didn't catch it, I'd encourage you to go listen to the podcast, check it out on YouTube. Had a great discussion and conversation with economist Dr. Vance Ginn, who was in Trump's Office of Budget and Management, the chief economist during the first Trump administration. It's worth listening to because this is a huge gamble. And I strongly believe that the president is using up a lot of political goodwill with these decisions. You can already see the market impact. Now, the stock market is not necessarily the best barometer and the only barometer of the economy, right? I mean, I think it is important to note that, right? We saw under the Biden administration, the stock market actually looked pretty good, right? And it's because the Federal Reserve has a multi-billion dollar balance sheet. The Treasury Department kept pumping money into the U.S. economy. The stock market looked pretty good. You went to the grocery store, however, you saw a very different economy that you did looking at the, you know, the big Bloomberg terminal and seeing all the green lines and green arrows moving up. The stock market is not necessarily an indicator of the economy. But when you've got multiple days back and forth, I mean, NASDAQ futures now down 3.5%. Dow futures now down over 3. S&P futures down 3.18. I mean, it's a major, major issue. Now, how long can this go on? Trump wants to bring investment, bring more manufacturing, bring more production to the United States. It's a worthy goal. But, man, is it risky. And I hope that the individuals around him, I hope these individuals have a plan B and have some sort of time frame as to how long we allow this to play out. Because if not, you end up cratering the entire economy. And the American people voted for him to explicitly fix that issue. Many folks voted solely on the U.S. economy. They wanted a prosperous American economy. They were frustrated with the inflation, frustrated with the out-of-control spending over the last 4 years, and they wanted a change. Now, they're getting a change. The question is, how long are they willing to wait for it? That's the million-dollar question this morning. So we'll keep an eye on the markets. We'll keep an eye on these tariff discussions. Again, that breaking news out of China. Within the last hour, Beijing set to impose a 34% retaliatory tariff on all U.S. goods imported into China starting April the 10th. That's next Thursday. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. I want to remind you that if you are interested in getting show notes as well as some bonus content, including our monthly Zoom hangout that happens at the end of each month, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig, $5, $10 a month if you believe you are getting some value and enjoying the show. I encourage you to head on over to patreon.com and financially supporting this endeavor of new media that we've seen grow over the last couple of years, patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've got some additional details and some more news coming up this morning. Some details around the Senate budget plan. A very juicy story surrounding the North Carolina battleship, as well as some bridge closures over at Wrightsville Beach. Perfect time of the year for DOT to be closing roadways over at Wrightsville Beach. We'll have all those details coming up here in just a few minutes. You're watching The Nick Craig Show live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live on a Friday morning, YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Keeping our attention in Washington, D.C. this morning, the Senate took an initial vote yesterday to advance a budget blueprint for enacting President Donald Trump's agenda, with all but one Republican unifying around the outline for sweeping tax and spending cuts. The support had not necessarily been guaranteed when Senate Republicans first started hashing out their plans to provide different instructions to Senate committees for how to approach the tax and spending cuts that the House provided in its panels. And just like we talk about here in the North Carolina General Assembly, even though you've got both Republican, led by Republicans, the agendas, the things that are important, the priorities are not always the same. Now, for the most part, at the very high levels, they're the same. But when you get into some more of the nitty-gritty, how much are we going to cut here? How much are we going to change there? This, that, and the other. Then things change, right? They're not always in line. We see that here in North Carolina. We definitely see it up in Washington, D.C. Fiscal hawks were worried that the blueprint would not provide adequate guarantees that budget reconciliation bill is set up will cut deep into federal spending. While a few other Republicans had concerns that it could go too far in allowing cuts and could affect programs like Medicaid. Leadership, of course, had to play the balancing act and then can deal with some of the concerns from GOP factions in Washington, D.C., while also worrying about the strict Senate rules that guide the reconciliation process they are using to skirt a filibuster and pass the president's priorities along party lines. President Donald Trump, who has said that he is in full support of the Senate plans, he called it the, quote, right-size budget and endorse the blueprint that lawmakers will use to draft, quote, one big, beautiful bill. You've heard that from the president for quite some time. Ultimately, only one Republican in Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky could not be swayed to support it. He did not vote in favor of it, and Thursday night's vote passed 52-48. The Senate will now proceed with up to 50 hours of debate on the budget before beginning a vote-a-rama in which senators can offer unlimited amendments. Most are expected to come from Democrats. Those will obviously all fall flat on the floor of the Senate. But to their credit, yeah, that's what they're going to try and do. Senator Jeff Merkley out of Oregon, who is also on the Budget Committee, a ranking member there, said that the amendments will share of a big theme of family loss, families lose, billionaires win. That's what they are claiming to be the GOP plan, while not hitting on more specific issues of concern. Don't you think that's kind of overused? I mean, the idea that the Republican Party is still this, the country club Republicans, as it was in the past, it's just not true anymore. I mean, if these two or three past election cycles have showed us anything else, and some folks disagree with this and don't love President Trump, and that's fine. But what was the Democrat Party in the working class American, the blue collar American? The Democrat Party had a stronghold on those voters. The Democrat Party had a stronghold on that voting block. And a lot of it came from union support and big manufacturing that took place in the United States in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. That was the party of the regular working man. That was the party of the guy that goes out, works in his factory for 40 hours a week. Right? The Democrat Party was you. Trump has completely reversed that, though. Donald Trump, and it's obvious by going and looking at his rallies. Now, I've had the opportunity, and I encourage everybody, regardless, and obviously you're not going to have the ability to do it anymore, but throughout the last couple of years, I've encouraged both sides to go to a Trump rally. Obviously, for different, you know, they have different thoughts on it. If you're a Republican, going to a Trump rally is very different than if you're a Democrat, sure. But it's amazing when you go to these events. I've been to a dozen, if not more, probably more, Trump events, maybe 20 or so. And when you see the individuals that are at these events, when you see the people that are standing in line for 6 hours and then waiting and standing on a tarmac for another four to hear the president, at the time, the former president of the United States talk, it's remarkable. It is a great slice of the working class American person. And so the idea that Democrats, and of course, always claiming, oh, tax cuts help the billionaires, the regular middle class people get screwed, I don't think that works. I mean, it's a good talking point, sure. It's something that maybe in the past was relatively successful for the left, but I don't think people are drinking that Kool-Aid anymore. I'm not sure that that hits the way that it may have 30 years ago. I'm not sure that it's got the same pizzazz that it used to. I mean, the Trump tax cuts, which are set to expire at the end of this year, have drastically reduced the taxes that you pay. Right? You've got, another week and a half or so to get your taxes done for 2024? You can see the effect in what you're paying. Right? You can see it directly in your taxes that you file and deal with each and every year. And so to claim that all of the, what's coming out of this big, beautiful bill, the Senate budget plan, which Trump has fully endorsed, is hurting families and billionaires are the ones winning, I just don't think that works. He said, quote, this is Senator Jeff Merkley, quote, we'll do a lot about the healthcare heist and the impact on Medicaid, adding that his party will highlight potential cuts to other programs as well, saying, quote, we'll undoubtedly spend a significant amount of time on the massive amount of debt that they're creating in their effort to hide it from the American people. Now, I do think the healthcare stuff will be effective for the left. We even saw throughout the presidential election cycle that talks of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, this is a very, very good talking point for the left. Now, I'll remind you and bring to your attention, it's not based in reality. There is no plan that I have seen that has come forward that discusses dissolving Social Security or dissolving Medicaid. I just haven't seen it. Nobody is talking about it. It's not any piece of legislation that's been introduced, and it's not in the budget plan. But it's very, very effective amongst a large group of voters and happens to be a group of voters that are very consistent in voting. I mean, you look at the chart of who shows up and vote based on age, and once you get over, it's like probably, it's either 45 or 50 years old, that is a very big uptick in the chart. You know, individuals, older individuals are much more consistent voters. They just are. Younger individuals, they just don't vote. I mean, that's the unfortunate reality of voting in elections. And so when you bring up Social Security and you bring up Medicaid, these entitlement programs, which is what I will call them because that's what they are, when you bring that stuff up, it is a huge, huge issue for that very involved voting bloc. So the Democrats will likely have some success with that. The Senate budget provides lawmakers with parameters they must follow in drafting the reconciliation legislation that Republicans say will extend and expand upon Trump's first-term tax cuts, funding for border security and defense needs, restoring American energy dominance, cutting wasteful federal spending. Rand Paul opposed the budget because it calls for a $5 trillion increase in the debt limit, borrowing that indicates that the GOP plan will not do enough to get spending under control. A few Republicans did not make up their minds until the last minute, but sided with President Trump and GOP leaders. Senator Josh Hawley, the Republican out of Missouri, voted yes, despite reservations that the budget changes did not remove any instruction requiring the House Energy and Commerce Committee to find $888 billion in savings, an amount that ensures some spending reductions will come from Medicaid based on the limited number of mandatory spending programs under the panel's jurisdiction. He said, quote, "I'm not going to vote for Medicaid cuts." And I think he and probably the vast majority of other Republicans are in agreement with that. So that's what we are looking at as it relates to the Senate budget plan, at least as it stands right now. We should see a lot more movement on this in the next couple of days. There's a lot of more quotes in this article this morning. It's over at the Washington Times. I'll put it up in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Turning our attention to an interesting local story this morning. I wrote this yesterday over at carolinajournal.com, and it's a pretty salacious headline. Battleship North Carolina director accused of illegal recording, fraud, and retaliation. Wow, pretty crazy stuff in this lawsuit. The executive director of the USS Battleship North Carolina is being accused of illegally recording conversations, falsifying timesheets, and retaliating against his assistant director, Chris Vargo, according to a new lawsuit. The Battleship North Carolina, which we all know very much well and love, has been moored in the Cape Fear River across from downtown Wilmington since 1961. It was originally slated to be scrapped by the U.S. Navy. The ship was preserved thanks to a very popular Save Our Ship campaign, which ran in the year 1960, which was successful in raising, I think it was a little over $300,000, to buy the ship essentially and relocate it to Wilmington. Since then, it has operated as a seven-day-a-week interactive museum under the North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources. So here's what's going on here. Chris Vargo, who is a 22-year veteran of the U.S. Coast Guard and spent 12 years working for the Battleship North Carolina before his termination in January, has filed the suit. He names the Battleship Commission, Executive Director Jay Martin, and the North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources in his lawsuit. He's seeking more than $25,000 in compensation damages, reinstatement of his former position, and removal of Martin as the executive director. And the 18-page lawsuit claims that Vargo was fired on January the 24th for reporting Martin's alleged misconduct and asserts violation of federal whistleblower protection act laws. Right, so he's calling out the executive director, Jay Martin, of the USS North Carolina battleship. According to the complaint, Vargo says that Martin unlawfully planted a recording device in a conference room to capture conversations between Vargo and contractors as it related to the battleship's Living with Water project. That project aims to address tidal flooding in the parking lot and throughout the property over at the battleship in violation of state and federal wiretapping laws. Martin sought to make Vargo a scapegoat for project delays and budget overruns, the suit contends, even though Vargo did not have the authority to prevent them. Reading directly from the lawsuit, quote, on several occasions in the summer of 2024, Jay Martin, the executive director, reported to Vargo, Chris Vargo, that he was working 60 to 70 hours per week and instructed that Vargo enter his time accordingly. Yet during these times, Martin was not on site at the battleship and no one working there knew where he was or what he was doing. That's a direct quote there from the suit. The suit then claims at that time, Martin was a professor at Central Michigan University, teaching nearly full time, with the lawsuit arguing that Martin wasn't even in Wilmington when he was claiming 60 to 70 hours a week worth of salary. Obviously, you work a 40-hour week, you're talking about potentially 30-plus hours of overtime pay. So defrauding taxpayers in North Carolina. Attorney Jonathan Marks of Clommers, Adams, Backer, and Kaufman, PLLC, who represents Chris Vargo, stated in a press release that individuals should be able to voice concerns without fear of retaliation. Attorney Marks said, quote, Mr. Vargo did the right thing by speaking up about what he witnessed at the battleship. His termination threatens to chill our employees from speaking up if they see something wrong. And it raises questions about the Battleship Commission's commitment to compliance, integrity, and accountability. The lawsuit also alleges that the Battleship Commission, which hired Martin just last year in 2024, intentionally sought out non-military leadership for the battleship despite the job posting requiring it. The lawsuit reads, on information and belief, certain commission members, most notably Vice Chairman Marsha Morgan, that's a prominent North Carolina political figure, were determined to lessen, if not purge, military influence from the battleship's management. Morgan believed correctly that the former senior military officers were likely to push back on the commission's ideas when they were misguided. So that's one of the other claims in this lawsuit as well. Here in Wilmington, this was filed in Superior Court Tuesday, actually, April the 1st. So that's where it was filed. Marsha Morgan, of course, a prominent North Carolina figure. She has ran for political office before. Most recently, it was in 2022, running against State Senator Michael Lee, who now is the majority leader in the North Carolina Senate. She's also run against Charlie Miller and other individuals as well. She has been unsuccessful in those races and now is serving on this battleship commission here in Wilmington. So a very interesting story, some very juicy details. We'll continue to track it right here on the Nick Craig Show. You can read additional stories this morning by visiting carolinajournal.com. Over to Wrightsville Beach this morning, the four-lane Causeway Drive Bridge will close one lane next week. Perfect timing, just in time for beach season. Routine bridge maintenance is required, with the North Carolina Department of Transportation and their crews correcting concrete spallings to prevent tiny pieces from flaking off and doing touch-ups on the side and underneath the bridge. One of the outside lanes near the sidewalks will be closed between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. on April the 7th and is likely to remain closed that day and for many days going forward, likely through April the 11th. So this will start next Monday and likely last all of next week. Crews will work on the outside lane into Wrightsville Beach first and then switch to the outside lane leaving the beach once the other lane is complete. The other lanes will remain open to traffic during repairs. Motorists should proceed with caution through those work zones. And of course, that is going to cause traffic to slow down pretty heavily in that area. There is a big bridge replacement project that continues under discussion over at Wrightsville Beach, specifically for the Causeway Drive Bridge. I can't even begin to imagine. You thought the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge project was a mess and a traffic nightmare. You can only imagine what something like that might look like over in Wrightsville Beach. We'll keep an eye on those details as we continue to get more information from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. In one other local story this morning, Avelo Airlines has officially opened its new base of operations at the Wilmington International Airport, a big ribbon cutting yesterday with Governor Josh Stein in attendance. ILM will be Avelo's eighth base, where they will eventually position two aircraft, three new flight destinations, and create up to 50 new jobs. According to ILM Airport Director Jeff Burke, he says, quote, "The crews are your neighbors, the flight attendants, the pilots, the ground crews, they work here. They care about the service even that much more out of this market specifically. It's just a really cool day to see it all come together." As ILM continues to grow, the announcement brought out Governor Josh Stein, who hopes that the low-cost airline will bring even more growth to the coast. The governor saying at the press conference yesterday, quote, "Avelo has helped spark a resurgence here. When that happens, we get visitors, tourists that come here that spend their money on local businesses, but it also helps businesses to know that if they settle here in Wilmington, they can remain connected to the rest of the country and the rest of the world." The airline also began three new nonstop routes this week. Boston/Manchester, New Hampshire, that airport is MHT. That began yesterday with twice weekly service on Thursdays and Sundays. Direct flights to Nashville also began yesterday, Thursday, twice weekly service, Thursdays and Sundays. And Rochester, ROC, begins their flights today, Fridays and Mondays for their flights there as well. So Avelo continuing to make major investments in the Wilmington International Airport, and we continue to see that airport grow. Even just to think, I remember my first visit to Wilmington back in 2016 when I first visited and was beginning the process of looking to move down here for work. The airport was incredibly small, and that was just 9 years ago. I mean, just one big room with all the gates, very little food and concession options available. Then you transform to where it is now. I flew out of there just a couple of weeks ago, and it's a completely different place. That growth is great. To have more flights available at cheaper costs so you don't have to drive to Raleigh, you don't have to drive to Myrtle Beach, or God forbid the 3.5-hour trek out to Charlotte to fly is great for the area, great for business, and of course great for individuals that call Wilmington and southeastern North Carolina home. So some great news. Avelo waiting on a couple more nonstop flights from them. They seem to announce them about every couple months. We'll keep an eye on it right here. Well, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Again, Azalea Fest weekend kicking off across the coast this weekend. Beautiful weather ahead. Hopefully you'll get out and enjoy some of that. We are back with you Monday morning live, 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And of course, 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great Friday and a great weekend. We'll chat with you Monday morning.